We are live. It's so great to see everyone, to be able to learn together for our power half hour on Friday morning to charge us and energize us as we go into the sanctity of Shabbos. And we do so by learning about the Parsha and by preparing ourselves with a little bit of inspiration to tap into the magic of Shabbos Kodesh. So as we do every week, and this is our custom now, as we do three ideas in 30 minutes, here we go. Idea number one is an idea that really should be drawn out a little bit more, but we'll try to do it in shorthand. And it comes from the story of the request of the tribes of Reuven and Gad to remain, of course, on the east bank of the Jordan River. Now, if you pay attention tomorrow when we read the Torah, and it's a very long Torah reading, so you're going to need a lot of patience to get through all of it, but you'll notice that it's a very strange conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu on the one hand and between the tribes of Gad and Reuven on the other hand. The tribes of Gad and Reuven, at the beginning of the 32nd chapter that we're going to read, come with a seemingly innocuous request. They say the real estate's better here. There's more land. There's more space for our cattle. And if you pay attention to Moshe's response, Moshe flies off the handle. He goes absolutely ballistic at these two tribes. And then the two tribes come back and they say, no, of course, we're going to fight for the Jewish people. It's not as big of a deal. Don't worry. Moshe responds. And he, once again, he comes right at these two tribes. And you're almost like reading the conversation and you're wondering, are they speaking at each other? Are they speaking to each other? Are they speaking over each other? So the two tribes come back and they say, of course, we're going to fight on behalf of the Jewish people. And then Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and he says, are you going to fight for the Jewish people? And they come back and they say, yeah, we just said we're going to fight for the Jewish people. And in fact, I found, and if you count tomorrow, five parts of the conversation. After the initial request of these two tribes, Moshe Rabbeinu goes into this ballistic diatribe where he conjures up the imagery of Chet HaMeraglim and says, how could you go through this again? After that initial conversation, there's a five-part back and forth. The tribes say, we're going to fight. Moshe Rabbeinu says, are you going to fight? The tribes say, we're going to fight. Moshe says, are you going to fight? And the tribes finally say, we're going to fight. And that's the end of the conversation. And so my first question this morning is very simple. It's a very strange back and forth. It's almost as if they're not hearing each other. This never happens in my house, but I have been told by other couples that sometimes a couple will be having a conversation and you'll be in the middle of the conversation. You'll say to yourself, like, are we, did you not hear what I just said? I just told you I would take out the garbage. And then I just told you I'd take out the garbage. Right? No, but you have to take out the garbage. You never take out the garbage. I just told you I'd take out the garbage. That's exactly what it seems like between Moshe Rabbeinu and these two tribes. Moshe Rabbeinu keeps saying, you gotta fight. And these two tribes keep saying, we're gonna fight. And Moshe comes back and says, by the way, you gotta fight. And these two tribes come back and say, we're gonna fight. And Moshe says, did I mention, by the way, that you have to fight? And these two tribes come back and say, Moshe, we got it. We got the message. We're going to fight. So how do you understand this very strange back and forth? And I want to make the following suggestion. I found it in a beautiful Sefer on Tanakh by Rabbi Rivlin, who's from Keren B'Yavne. I think he passed away recently. But he writes the following, he makes the following suggestion. He says, if you follow the progression of the conversation, what might look like simple redundancy over and over and over again, Moshe, we're going to fight, are you going to fight? Moshe, we're going to fight, are you going to fight? There's really subtle differences in the text. And those subtle differences hold the key to the entire storyline. Here's the difference. I'm going to share it with you in one instance. You're going to have to go home. You're going to have to do the hard work yourself tomorrow and over Shabbos. But I'm going to give you the little tidbit here. Let me share with you a comment. Says the children of God in Reuven back to Moshe, when Moshe says, don't think if you stay on the east bank of the Jordan River, you're getting away without fighting. They respond and says, "V'anachnu nechaleitz chushim lifnei bnei Yisrael." We are going to go and fight lifnei bnei Yisrael, which is a nice way of saying alongside our brothers, the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and he says, "By the way, did I mention you have to fight?" Only listen to Moshe's terminology. "Vayomer Moshe aleh Moshe." Moshe says to them, Im techaltzu lifnei Adonai lamilchama. If you fight, not before Bnei Israel, but if you fight before Hashem. Now that's a very subtle difference, says Rav Rivlin, but it's an important difference. Reuven and Gad come along and say, we're going to fight alongside the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and says, you're going to fight alongside Hashem. So B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, they got the message that this isn't about the Jewish people, this is about Hashem. And so they respond to Moshe. And they said, Moshe, everything you told us to do, we're going to do. Avadecha yasu kashir adoni mitzaveh. Everything you, Moshe Rabbeinu, told us to do, we are going to do. And Moshe Rabbeinu comes back, and he says something amazing. He says, it's not about what I want you to do. But he says, right, Vayanu b'nei Gad v'nei Reuven le'mor, es asher diber Adonai el avadecha keinaseh. When B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven come back the fifth time, it's no longer as Moshe commanded, but it's now about how Hashem commanded. And so idea number one is as follows. You have in chapter 32 of the Parsha that we're going to read tomorrow, the first of the Parshas that we're going to read tomorrow, a very strange conversation. It seems like Moshe and B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven are talking through each other, not to each other. They're not listening to one another. There's an enormous amount of redundancy in the conversation. Says Rav Rivlin, there's not. That Moshe Rabbeinu is actually teaching them a profound lesson. And while we think, on a very simplistic terms, the profound message is, don't think you're getting away without fighting on behalf of the Jewish people, there's actually something far more fundamental at play, which is, who is doing the fighting? Is it me and my strength doing the fighting? Or is it Hashem and my belief in Him that's doing the fighting? Am I trusting in my own abilities and my own strength? Or am I placing my reliance on Hashem? And so says Rav Rivlin, if you look at it through that lens, there's a tremendous, beautiful progression in the entire conversation. Reuven and Gad come to Moshe and say, we're going to fight with the Jewish people. In other words, we're going to amass military might, tanks and airplanes and gunpowder, everything we need for battle. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, no, you're missing the point, right? Im techatzun lifnei Adonai lamilchama. It's God who's ultimately doing the battle, not you, and don't you forget it. So B'nai Gad and Reuven come back and say, okay, we got the message, Moshe. It's about Hashem. Everything you commanded, we're going to do. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, everything I commanded? Guys, you're missing the point. This isn't about me. This is about Hashem. And so in the fifth penultimate part of this conversation, what do they say? They say, oh, we get the message. We're going to do it. Like Asher Diber Adonai El Avadecha Kenasu. And that's when the conversation ends. The conversation ends when the children of God and Reuven realize that it's not about them, that it's not even about Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's about Hashem. It's about placing our faith in Hashem. It's about that Hashem fights for us, not our own power in our own might. And so message number one that we are going to discuss this morning is ultimately who does the fighting on behalf of the Jewish people. Is it us or is it Hashem? Who do we place our faith in? Do we place our faith in our own strength and our own capabilities? Or do we place our strength in Hashem? Now, if we had more time, and this was more of a Tanakh class, I would develop the following theme, but I'll just tease you with it because I know some of you have come to a lot of my classes and we've discussed this in the past and it'll connect some of the dots for you. This is not just a theme that appears here in Parshas Matos. This is a theme that develops itself throughout Tanakh. Most notably, it develops itself in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the contrast between Paro in his sus v'rachvo, his military might, and the notion that we say Hashem yilachem lachem, that it's ultimately, we believe that Hashem is the one who did the fighting on our behalf. We say it every single morning in Lam Natzeach, right in between Ashrei and Uval Tzion at the end of Davening. We say Eila v'rechev, the Eila Vasusim, there are those who place their faith in military might and human power. Va'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu Naskir, but we place our faith in Hashem. It plays out in the story of Gan Eden, when Adam and Chava say that we, v'hayisem le'elokim, we are going to be like God, that mankind has the capacity, the strength to be like God. And Hashem comes along and says, no, you're out of here. Don't ever think that you can have the strength of God. It is me who has the strength, and your job is to put your faith in me. So it's a broader Tanakh concept, but it plays out magnificently in chapter 32 of our parsha, and I want you to pay attention to it tomorrow morning. Again, the idea number one is that the conversation between B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven isn't just about, are you going to go into the land of Israel? You're not going to go into the land of Israel. It's much more. There's a much more fundamental idea at stake here. And that is, who does the fight? Is it us, our strength, our capability, our capacity? Or is it our belief in Hashem? Do we believe in our own strength? Or do we ultimately allow ourselves to rely on Hashem? Obviously, this has far-ranging consequences. It has far-ranging consequences in our own lives when it comes to our business dealings. Do I believe it's me and my own capabilities and my own capacities? Or do I recognize that every gift I have is from Hashem? It applies on a national level when it comes to the state of Israel, that while we're so grateful to the young men and young women who put themselves on the front lines to preserve and protect our beloved homeland, but do we ultimately recognize that who is the one who does the battle for us? It's not the young men and the young women. They are the conduit, but they're ultimately coming from Hashem. They are the little pawns on the chessboard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if I recall, a couple months ago, I quoted that Rav Ovadia Yosef in the 2006, in the Second Lebanon War, that it was right during the summer. And Rav Ovadia Yosef paskined for all of the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael that they were not allowed to take a break that year for Bein Hazmanim. Because he said, if we have soldiers that are fighting on the front lines, we can't just go home and have vacation. We have to do our job to fight the fight, and that's by learning Hashem's Torah and putting our belief in Hashem. And so ultimately, there's that relationship. Obviously, you need an army, but you also need to recognize that it's not the army, but it's ultimately our reliance on Hashem. That is idea number one. All that could very easily be missed in the Parsha because you glance over it and you just say, okay, get to the point, Moshe. No, says Rav Rivlin, there's an enormous amount of depth and insight if you pay attention to some of the subtleties in those few psukim. That's idea number one. Idea number one, we stay in the two tribes of Gad and Menashe, only we add another half of a tribe. And that is Chatzi Sheva Menashe, half of the tribe of Menashe. And it's very strange because when Reuven and Gad come to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's just Reuven and Gad, it's two tribes. When Moshe responds and says, you can stay on the east bank of the Jordan River, Moshe adds in Chatzi Sheva Menashe. That it's not just going to be the two tribes of Reuven and Gad, but it's also going to be half the tribe of Menashe. And the obvious question is why? Why does Moshe add that in? It's a very famous question, maybe one of the most famous questions on these two parshas. And if you look in Art Scroll, on page 915, on that exact pasuk, Art Scroll quotes the Degel Machane Ephraim, who is a noted grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And according to Art Scroll, the Degel Machane Ephraim says that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu adds in half of the tribe of Menashe is because he's nervous that the children of Gad and Reuven will feel disconnected from the rest of the Jewish people. And so Moshe Rabbeinu makes the following calculation. If I split up the tribe of Menashe and I put half of them in Israel and half of them with the tribes of Reuven and Gad, then Reuven and Gad will always feel connected to Israel because, right? E.T. phone home. The tribe of Menashe that's on the east bank of the Jordan River are going to call their relatives in the tribe of Menashe that are on the land of Israel. And that connection will ensure that forever there is the bridge between the tribes on the east bank of the Jordan River and the tribes on the west bank of the Jordan River, namely our homeland, Eretz Yisrael. And so if you look in Art Scroll, he quotes the Degel Machane Ephraim, that the reason why Moshe split up the tribe of Menashe is to foster that connection and ensure that eternal connection between the tribes wherever they are. That because Menashe will always want to stay connected with each other, if half of them are here and half of them are there, they'll always stay connected. It's a beautiful idea. Achdus, unity. Here's the problem. Look up the Degel Machane Ephraim. It is not what he says. Now, this is obviously a broader conversation about how things are quoted and how editors choose to reflect the words of the author and why we look at primary sources and not secondary sources. But I actually looked up the Degel Machane Ephraim because I was curious if that's what he actually says. And lo and behold, it is not what the Degel Machane Ephraim says. Now again, Art Scroll, I'm sure they had wonderful intentions, but it's not what the Degel Machane Ephraim says. Listen to what he says. He says that yes, Moshe Rabbeinu splits up the tribe, right, that there was a concern about disconnect. That Reuven and Gad had a concern that they would feel disconnected from the rest of the Jewish people. But Moshe's advice for how to stay connected is not just to split up the tribe of Menashe. Listen to the Degel Machane Ephraim. Amar Lehem Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says to these 2.5 tribes, Im Tavru Chalutzim, Velo Tifridu Atzmechem Israel. Im Tavru Chalutzim, which means, if you arm yourself with battle, Lo Tafridu Atzmechem Israel, then and only then will you not feel disconnected from your brothers and sisters in Israel. Only then will you feel that sense of unity. And so what the Dega Machne Ephraim is really saying is that yes, the Jews outside of Israel were struggling with how they were going to feel connected to the Jews who were living inside of Eretz Israel. And the way to feel connected, says the Dega Machne Ephraim, is not the way Artscore quoted. But the way to feel connected, says the Dega Machne Ephraim, is to fight on behalf of the people who are living in Israel. And so he tells them to go fight for the land. And by doing so, you'll remain forever linked to that land. And so, yes, you can be in the diaspora, says the Dega Machane Ephraim, says Moshe Rabbeinu to these two tribes. You don't need to physically be in the land of Israel, although it's wonderful, and obviously we know that it was the right thing to do. But he says, even if you're not going to physically be in the land of Israel, if you're going to be in the diaspora, if you're going to live in Boca Raton, if you're going to live in New York, if you're going to live in California, the way to feel connected is to fight for the land. And if you fight for the land, that is the biggest guarantor that your connection to the land of Israel will remain forever strong. Now, I think this is a earth-shattering Dega Machane Ephraim. First of all, because it's misquoted. But second of all, what's remarkable is that the Dega Machane Ephraim understood that living across the ocean from the land of Israel, or living across the Jordan River from the land of Israel, in the case of Tanakh, you can feel dangerously disengaged from that land unless you heed Moshe's advice that while you could be apart physically, that if you fight for the land in whatever way possible, then your connection to the land will forever remain strong. And what that means for us is the following. Some of us have children, some of us have grandchildren who actually go and physically fight in the Israeli army. You are my heroes. I love you. That's why we feature you and your children in our weekly now every week. But then there are people like me where no matter how hard I wanted, if I went to Israel right now and said, I'd like to volunteer for the Israeli army, do you know what they would do to me? They would laugh in my face. They would say, we don't need an out of shape, whatever year old. I'm not going to admit my age publicly, right? But they don't want me, even though, by the way, I could probably outrun half of them. They're going to say, we don't want you. A rabbi, slow and sluggish, eats too many chillens, right? So no matter how hard I try, I'm not going to be able to fight in the IDF. But you and I both know that there are lots of ways to fight for Israel. There are ways to fight through Israel, through AIPAC, through FIDF, through ZOA, through any number of incredible organizations. Stand With Us. I could tell you, college campuses, advocacy, supporting the idea, right? There are numerous ways that you and I can support the land of Israel, that we could fight for the land of Israel, that will ensure our connection to the land of Israel. And here's my advice. Here's my guarantee. That if you raise your children in a home where there's a palpable sense of fighting for the land of Israel, your children are going to grow up with that same fight in them. They're going to grow up with that same passion in them. If you're worried about them feeling that dangerous disengagement from Israel, the way to do it is teaching them how to fight for Israel. Whether it's through your wallet, whether it's through our voice, whether it's by physically going there, says the Dega Machane Ephraim, the way to counteract, the way to fight against disengagement, and I know that yesterday was the anniversary of the disengagement from Gush Katif, but the way to fight the disengagement is by using, again, listen to the words of the Dega Machane Ephraim. Im tavru chalutzim. If you fight, if you arm yourself, lo tifridu atzmechem Israel, you will never be disconnected from whatever's happening in Israel. That, to me, is the most important advice for diaspora Jewry. We see it playing out in our day and age where young people, millennials across the country, are feeling that sense of disengagement from the state of Israel and how tragic and sad that is. But the Dega Machane Ephraim's advice rings true, which is that we have to teach them to fight for Israel, to fight for advocating for Israel, to fight for the physical well-being, the survival of Israel, for the people who serve on the front lines of Israel. That is how we fight back against the dangerous disengagement is by teaching ourselves to fight for the land. So idea number one was a beautiful idea by Rav Rivlin, which says that the whole conversation of Reuven and God was a conversation about who has the power. Is it us, me, my capability, my capacity? The bigger my muscles are, the stronger I'm going to be. Or do I put my faith in Hashem? And do I recognize that, yes, while Hashem wants me to partner with him, and we do need an army and we need to support that army, ultimately, who does my belief reside in? It resides in Hashem. That was idea number one, the beautiful idea by Rav Rivlin. Idea number two was this Degel Machne Ephraim, which I promise you, you'll never think about this the same way again. Where despite the fact that Art Scroll quotes the Degel Machne Ephraim as saying one thing, that's not what he says. He says that Moshe's advice to Reuven and God for how to not feel disengaged from Israel was by fighting for Israel. And while there he was talking in physical terms, you and I both know that it doesn't have to be physically. Israel needs a lot of different types of people in their army, a lot of ambassadors around the world, and you and I can play a significant role in it. Get off the sidelines, no matter what age you are, it doesn't matter. Israel needs you. We need the support. They need our finances. They need our kishkas. They need our heart. They need our soul. Okay, that was idea number two. Idea number three comes from the exact same storyline. We haven't gotten off that storyline because there aren't so many exciting storylines. But here's the idea number three. Also starts off as a very famous idea that I'm going to give a little bit of a twist to. Tribes of Reuben and God come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, we want to stay on the east bank of the Jordan River. Moshe Rabbeinu says, why? They said, because Gidrot Son Nivne L'miknenu Po V'arim L'tapenu. The land here is vast. And we happen to have an enormous amount of cattle. So we want to be in a place that has more real estate because Nivne L'miknenu, because we want to build, right? We want to build area for our cattle. We want to build farms for our cattle. And Ve'arim L'tapenu. We have a lot of children also, so we want cities for our children. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he responds to the two tribes, again, if you pay attention to the nuance of the pasuk, says, "Benu lachem arim letapchem ugderos letzonchem." Moshe Rabbeinu flips the order. That whereas God and Reuven come and ask for a place for cattle and for children, Moshe Rabbeinu, in his response, says you can build a place for children and a place for cattle. So he flips the entire order. Rashi tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu did that as a form of musar to the two tribes. And what Rashi says Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them was that your priorities are wrong. Asu ha'ikr tafel ve'atafel ikr. You made that which is important secondary and that which is secondary important. And those, you placed your materialistic needs before your family. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu responds, he puts the children before work, right? Which one do you value more? Do you value work more or do you value children more? So they come and say, right, I'm killing it at work. I got to spend a couple more hours in the office. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, no, it's really your children that matter. The office can wait until tomorrow. Okay? That, says Rashi, is why Moshe Rabbeinu pulls the switcheroo. But if you look at the Medrash actually extrapolates on the conversation a little bit and tells us that this wasn't just like, oh, misplaced priorities. Moshe Rabbeinu corrected it, bada bing, bada boom. That is not what happened. Says the Medrash that Reuven and God are actually punished for their misplaced priorities. And the Medrash says, Atem chivavtem es miknechem yoser mina nefashos. You valued your materialism more than your family. As a result, chayechem ein bo bracha. You will never see financial success. You will never see material success. You valued possessions more than your children. Moshe Rabbeinu says, or Hashem responds and says, you will never receive a blessing. And the Medrash goes on and says, and as a result of this mistake, that when it ultimately comes the time to exile the Jewish people, you will be the first ones to be sent into exile. Now, if I am Reuven and God, what is my response to Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? What's my response? I'm going to pick on Sam again. So my response would be, sorry, just your face is always in the first thing, right? My response would be, Moshe, come on, buddy. I misspoke, right? Cancel culture. Moshe, stop beating me up. I misspoke. I said the wrong word. Yes, I may have even had misplaced priorities, but like, don't you think you're going a little overboard? Don't you think the punishment doesn't fit the crime? Here I put my cattle before my family, and you changed to family before the cattle. Shkoyach Moshe was a learning opportunity, growth mindset. I'm going to get better going on. But as a result, I'm never going to have bracha in my life. that as a result, I'm going to be the first ones that get into exile? How is that fair? Moshe Rabbeinu, cut me some slack. It seems a little bit disproportionate. So here's the answer that I want to suggest with you. And it's an incredible answer that I money back guaranteed will change your 3 weeks. Money back guaranteed. We know that the reason why we're mourning during the 3 weeks is because of the three cardinal sins, right? It says them, and because of sin aschinim, right? It says the Gemara of Amikdash Sheni, what was the reason the second Beis Amikdash was destroyed, where they didn't do the three cardinal sins, right? The first Beis Amikdash they did. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, idolatry, promiscuity, murder. Okay, I get that. Beis Hamikdash deserved to be destroyed. Second Beis Hamikdash, they were all righteous. They did chesed. They learned Torah. Why was it destroyed? Says the Gemara, of course we know this. Mibnei shehaisa bo sinas chinam. Because there was baseless hatred. Now, I'm not going to get into that now. I'm running out of time. Okay, but because of baseless hatred. Listen to the Gemara Yerushalmi, which quotes the exact same conversation. Why was the second Beis Hamikdash destroyed? Only listen to the answer. Ela she'ayu ohavin es hamamon visonin elu le'elu sinas chinam. Let me read that again, because I think some of you just jumped out of your seats and fell on the floor. Ela she'ayu ohavin es hamamon, they loved money, visonin elu le'elu sinas chinam, and they hated each other. Says Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger, the Rav, former Rav of Gilo, in his Sefer Ela Hadvarim, those two parts of the statement are actually connected. That because they loved money, they also hated each other. In other words, they valued money more than they valued people. And when you value money more than you value people, what happens? It leads to animosity. It leads to hatred. And so Moshe Rabbeinu does a calculation in his head. He says, if the tribes of Reuven and Gad value their money more than they value their families, then that is going to lead to catastrophic mistakes. Again, listen to this amazing Yerushalmi. Ohavin es hamamon. That the sin of the second Beis HaMikdash was that they loved money too much. Visonin elu elu sinaschinim. And as a result of that, they started to hate each other. It caused enormous jealousy. It caused enormous divisiveness. Everything wrong with money was the result of their misplaced priorities. Now, that is amazing, because we live in a day and age where no matter where you sit on the financial structure, it is hard to argue that we live in arguably, even though I just said it's hard to argue, right? In inarguably, one of the most affluent generations in Jewish history, right? That's very hard to dispute. Certainly when it comes to religious freedom, coupled with affluence, there's never been a time in world history where we have had it as good as we have it right now. But listen to this idea that I'm going to share with you. And I very rarely quote gematrias, but this one's a good one. Okay, we say in Shema every single day, we have to serve Hashem b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol me'odecha, with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your money. B'chol me'odecha. The gematria of me'odecha is 65. The numerical value of the word me'odecha is 65, which just so, by the way, happens to be the numerical value of two other words, heichal, which is the sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash, and Adonai, Hashem's name. And the message of that gematria is very simple, that money can be a double-edged sword. That on the one hand, money can be a heichal. B'chol me'odecha, money can bring Hashem into this world, and it can be used to sanctify His name. But the Yerushalmi is also true, that if used inappropriately, if used improperly with misplaced priorities, then instead of bringing Hashem into this world through generosity and chesed and building Torah institutions and shuls, then instead money leads to jealousy, envy, and sinas chinam. Instead of bringing Hashem into the world, it can drive Hashem out of the world by creating an enormous chilul Hashem. So this third idea to me is a total game changer, because we always think of the 3 weeks as a time of sinas chinam. But the Yerushalmi comes along and says what led to that sinas chinam was that they valued money more than they valued people. the misplaced priority was not just that they said, oh, you know what, I said the city, I said the cattle before the people. No. It was that they looked at life through what can get me more kavod, what can get me more money, what can get me more power. And when that's the start of every conversation, you're simply not going to bring Hashem into this world. The start of the conversation has to be, how do I create an environment that's welcoming for Hashem? And I'm going to use my resources, and I'm going to use my talents, and I'm going to use my money to be able to create structures and buildings and organizations that allow Hashem to come into this world. So idea number one was the beautiful idea by Rav Rivlin, that the whole conversation between Reuven, God, and Moshe wasn't just about going to the land of Israel, not going to the land of Israel. It's who has the power. Do we place strength in ourselves, or do we ultimately recognize our reliance on Hashem? Idea number two was a beautiful idea about the Degel Machne Ephraim, that how do you create a connection with Eretz Yisrael when you're not living there? Very apropos for all of us who are living across the ocean. The answer is you got to fight for it. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you're willing to fight for your brothers and sisters in Israel, that's how you remain connected. Otherwise, you run the risk of a dangerous disengagement. Idea number three was this magnificent idea from Rav Schlesinger in his Sefer Eila HaDvarim, the Rav of Gilo, where he says it's not just Sinas Chinam that brought down the Beis HaMikdash, but it was Shehayu Ohavim Es HaMamon V'Sonin Zelazeh. What caused the Sinas Chinam, what caused the disunity amongst the Jewish people, was that they valued their money more than they valued their relationships with each other. And when you do that, so think back to the gematria of the word Me'odecha, instead of creating a Heichal for Hashem, instead of creating a home for Hashem, an environment in this world that's welcoming to Hashem, we instead ended up with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We have driven Hashem out of this world because of our Chilul Hashem. And so that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, says Rav Schlesinger, responded the way he did to Bnei Gad and Reuven, because it's a slippery slope when you value your money more than you value your relationship with each other. Ultimately, bringing Hashem into this world is predicated on using our resources, using our affluence, using our talents and our gifts to help each other, not to drive a wedge between each other. So with that, I bid you farewell. I wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos. Hopefully some food for thought. I know some heavy Divrei Torah this morning, but hopefully some food for thought, something to energize you, some conversations at the Shabbos table, something to think about during a very long Torah reading tomorrow morning. But as always, I wish everyone that you should have a beautiful Shabbos, a meaningful Shabbos, an inspirational Shabbos. And as always, stay safe and stay besimcha. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful